Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
We're back.
We're back.
Yes. We are recording this toward the end of
2025.
Year of our Lord. Yes.
Lord and our Savior, Donald Cheeto Trump. That ugly fucker.
Now I'm just sad.
I know.
Appropriate for the episode.
Well, that's okay. And we're going to be talking about the sads a bit.
We are happy to greet you on the other side.
Yes.
2026.
So much anew.
Here we are.
To come.
So, let's begin with, what are your two of your ins and outs?
Sure, because I have a whole list.
2026.
I do love doing an ins and outs. It's one of my favorite questions this time of year. Just two. Okay. And if you're unfamiliar, listeners, with ins and outs, I think we maybe even did this at the head of our episode last year. I plucked it from TikTok because, hey, I'm unoriginal. You're basically just reflecting what is in for you and what is out. And I think it should cover an array of categories in your life. So, one of my ins this year for sure was movement. I found joy in movement for like the first time in my adult life. I'm 26. So, that was a really, really big thing for me this year. One of the themes of my year this year was do it scared. I feel like I did a lot of things scared this year. So, movement, but most specifically for mental health, somatic release, gaining just like confidence in myself, having nothing to do with weight and appearance. Okay. So that was one. And then going to therapy weekly and getting on the right med really, really changed my
life. Turns out it helps.
Turns out it works, by the way, when you go to therapy and you take the meds if you need them. So shout out to my homegirl, Pristique. We're rocking on a cool 50 milligrams. I'm enjoying her. Shout out to my psychiatrist, Emily, that diva. So yeah, and my therapist, I mean, she's just been with me through like literally every week this year, and it just has insanely paid off. Yay. My anxiety has dropped drastically. I just didn't even realize like how bad I was struggling. So I'm really proud of me for doing it scared this year and making those changes for myself. My outs, I've just been really percolating on this noodling, if we will. And I was kind of having a hard time, and I even still feel like a little bit guilty talking about it, which is kind of interesting. But this like over-identification with work identity and or like the identity of being a therapist. I've just been chatting about it with my therapist colleagues and folks here and there and a little bit in supervision. And this is just one of those like careers and industry that is just, I mean, it's so inherently personal, right? Like what we're doing is personal as fuck.
And most people are proud to be a therapist.
Very proud. And I think there is in the realm a bit with like doctors and surgeons, there's a little bit of that like martyrdom where it's like, oh, you're a therapist. Right. And then everyone wants to ask me shit. And I'm like, don't. Or like send me a bunch of therapist memes. And I'm like, listen, like I get it that it's so inherently personal. And I am such a deeply anxious person. And I have a really, really hard time with like forming my own opinions and my own identity and like being comfortable in who I am. And I can just get like a little bit lost in the sauce and feeling like this is also make and break. And if any of my clients are listening, like, I love you guys so much and the work that we do together. And I know this is the right work and place for me and just like some greater separation between that.
You're more than just your profession.
Yes. Right? And I'm just like a younger person in this profession of predominantly like older folks a lot of the time. So yeah, it's just kind of carving out like what this means for me going forward and having a healthier balance for that. And then over rotting. It had to go. It has to go. I can't, if I'm over-rotting in 2026, please gently be like, hey, remember. Cool. I used to think that going home every weekend and shit you not being horizontal from the couch to the bed to the couch to the bed or the floor was serving me well. Turns out it wasn't. I was like, yeah, I have like a 3 to 4 day like rot capacity. I was lying to myself and it just wasn't helping me at all. Physical rest is important, but I've been learning so much more about what rest actually means for me this year. And overrotting and just being dead and doom scrolling is, I allow myself to do it, but the capacity for that has shifted this year. And I hope to continue just like, because I'll throw myself into isolation and not realize it. Yeah. So that's been pretty meaningful this year for me to kind of course correct a little bit around that. Being open to changing is a huge aspect of that for me this year. It. So yeah, I'm really excited. What are your ins and outs?
So my ins and outs, and these are like, you were kind of speaking to like a little bit of this past year, but also I assume like what you know, what you want to carry forward. So some of this is like, I've started to wake up into this already, but like I want to call it in more civic engagement. I just feel like 2025 was like, I'm way too fucking overwhelmed with this insanity of what is happening, especially at the federal level. And I don't even know the first place to begin. And so, you know, this past few months, like getting more connected with Braver Angels, and I actually just this week got certified as a moderator. So I'm going to start looking for events to moderate for them. So I just really believe in that work. And I believe that's one place that I can be involved. But like, you know, for listeners, like the great thing about civic engagement is there's 8 million ways you can do it. Yes. Right. So you can find something that works for you and fits into your life. And I just, you know, as much as I value social justice and, you know, climate justice and all the things, animal justice, I just haven't always found ways to consistently like bake that into my life. So I'm just really calling that in, as well as Goblin Core. I actually did an episode on my old podcast, which you can still find, called Honor Your Spark, that was with a person who wrote a book on Goblin Core.
I remember.
And it was so good. I love talking to them. And I just, what I love about the idea of Goblin Core is the invitation to like mix and match and be all of yourself. Because I feel like over the past few years, I've really like, you know, at one point I was much more like that, like earth-centered, neutral, girly, like just meditative and yoga and all that. And then I was like the bad bitch therapist and neons and glitter and sequins and velvet. And I am all of those things. And so I'm just sort of like, you know what? It's really okay for those to coexist at the same time, even in the same outfit.
It's both and. Yeah.
It's both and. So I just love a Goblin Core, like mix and match and be your whole self. My outs are, going along with the Braver Angels piece, polarization, because I really see that as much as it doesn't mean that I've like softened my views on certain issues, what I have really challenged myself to do in recent months is like really look at my own polarization, how I'm like, by mocking other people, essentially, you know, we don't know all the ways that we do that. I mean, a lot, even a lot of like the late night stuff that I enjoy, is there's a lot of mocking there. And like, that's ultimately not that helpful. So, you know, just looking at my own internal polarization and like really challenging that. And then the other out is policing my own evolution, because I can, you know, get embarrassed for changing my mind on things and, you know, like processing things while they're fresh and let that being messy. But I'm just like, you know what? Like, my evolution can be as messy as it needs to be.
Because why the fuck not? Right. I mean, like, I'm committed to, like, changing my mind.
Yes.
I think. I'll let the pie be on my face for something.
Yeah.
And then change about that. You know? Exactly. Why not?
And actually, sidebar, like, connecting with the polarization issue, you know, we historically as a culture, we give politicians such a hard time when they change their mind on anything, because we're just like,
they're flip-flopping and
they're whatever. And I do understand when it's like, if they're only saying something because it's convenient to get votes.
Oh, sure.
And they're going to go out and do the opposite thing. Like, that's bullshit. But we have to, like, allow people to change when they learn more and get more knowledge about something. So, anywho.
Love it.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
So, I put something down and then I was like, and changed it at the last minute, of course. Vagus nerve stimulation. just paying attention to my nervous system, really trying to blend that into client work, and not even just only client work, personal work, you know, people in my life. Every time I get in the elevator, I'm going...
I hope you do that when there's other people on there too. That would be amazing.
And I do not. I wait for the time to be alone. That's some microdosing, some fear there. So I should, you know, try it out.
I would love to film their reaction.
Yeah.
Some dude.
In camera.
One of the Republicans. Yeah. Down the hall. But it's just, this season is really overwhelming for me. And we'll kind of course, get into this with our episode for today. But I've been pretty overwhelmed this season, and it's kind of taken me until like the past week to name that. So I've just been really trying to strip a lot of stuff back, focus on, like I said, like stimulating the vagus nerve, trying to shift myself out of fight or flight into rest and digest. I'm neurodivergent, and I think I sometimes forget that when it comes to my overwhelm and like sensory needs and things like that. So I've just been trying to take care of myself in that way when I feel like I've been at pretty minimal functioning for the month in general. Just have had a lot of shit going on. Just trying to like pay attention to my body. And shout out to my supervisor, Liz, and your bestie, Liz. We've been talking a lot about that in supervision. So I've been really inspired by her. And last night in my group, I was having us kind of open in that way. And all of these women were kind of giggling and looking at each other because we're going... We're making all these noises, but the laugh was such medicine for everybody, and I just really, really loved it. So, yeah, tickle your vagus nerve a little bit.
How nervous is your system?
Probably needs like 3,000 milligrams of Pristique, if that was possible.
I love it.
Yeah, okay. That's
great. Doing a little humming.
Hum, hum, a little hum, a little sing, a little, you know, it's nice.
Love it. Okay.
What about you?
Mine is a Canadian puppet show, child's puppet show, called Nanolan.
Oh, is that the little girly you keep sending
Mona? Oh my God.
Guys, Valerie is obsessed with that little diva.
Truly. She is a three-year-old little round green little headed with two little pigtail puffs. She's you. She is me. Thank you for seeing that. No, I deeply feel, just like kind of how I feel so... to a way that I can't even describe, so deeply resonant with Elmo. Ugh. And that's how I feel about Mona.
Yeah.
And the name of the show comes from, while her mom is at work, she spends her day at Nana's house. Mm. So it's Nana Land. Yeah. She has a little dog, Russell, but of course she calls him Russia. She's so precious. Aww. That and so all I had seen, I was obsessed with this little chica for like months, just seeing the viral memes. And I follow some fan accounts and the official account. The show was, only two seasons of the show were created, along with a bunch of shorts, in the early 2000s.
Oh my
like
God.
2002 to 2006 or something like that.
Oh, so less. I was barely sentient.
Yeah. And it's truly impressive. Like they do, you know, puppetry to me is so impressive. And the whole sets that they have to design, especially, you know, places that are doing it on a super limited budget. And then also, so we watched two episodes in full this past weekend, and they both involved a puppet show within a puppet show, which was so cool.
How meta.
Yeah. But it's so good. And yeah, she just like awakens that like pure innocence and wonder in me.
Yep.
And I'm like, girl, I am you. You are me. I love you. Can't recommend it enough. Follow some Nanolan or Mona accounts and go check them out on YouTube.
Obsessed. Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapist.
So this submission says, Dear M and Val, my holiday season was so not jolly this year. I didn't even drink over the holidays, but somehow I feel like my soul is hungover in a way that not even an afternoon of couch rotting and DoorDash can fix. I'm feeling so exhausted, unmotivated, and weirdly irritable about things that normally wouldn't bother me. I keep telling myself I should be grateful or excited for the new year, but mostly I just want to burn my calendar and hibernate like the bears do until spring.
My friends and family are sharing similar sentiments, which was surprising to me. And so I'm wondering if the collective experience post-holidays is this insane combination of depression, burnout, and existential fatigue, or is it just January doing its thing? How can I shed my Scrooge and get tapped into the potential of the new year ahead of me when I'm running on Christmas leftovers and sweatpants that desperately need a wash? Sincerely, spiritually dehydrated. Ooh. And spiritually dehydrated might be my favorite name so far.
Oh, me too. I'm giggling so hard. Spiritually dehydrated, diva, and diva is gender neutral. Yeah, I feel like I'm like, oh, how many snapshots of my holiday seasons have been this way? And that's why I really wanted for us to kind of delve into this episode today for so many reasons, because everything you said is a part of that weird kind of intangible space where you're just like, what the fuck is next? And is this it? It is existential and weird. And I'm glad that you're sharing with friends and family. I'm curious why it was surprising to you. You know, are you usually filled with everyone around you that is like, oh, yeah. Yeah. But I think this year, and even what I could see from clients, the conversations that we've been having leading up to the holidays in December, everyone is just exhausted.
Yeah.
There is this spiritual dehydration that's happening. I mean, if we look at the overview of this year, there has been just so much going on sociopolitically. And then on top of that, it's your own personal shit. Mm-hmm. So no wonder there is this kind of, you know, irritability and burnout. And then the existential fatigue comes in of what are we doing? What am I doing? What is next? We're just in really trying times, and I don't say that lightly. And so it is really challenging to come alongside of, you know, how am I wrapping up 2025? How am I looking in towards 2026 when you're all listening to this? There is no like cut and dry answer. And it is challenging to be making meaning in a world that a lot of times has felt pretty meaningless for certain people, depending on your own journey throughout 2025. So I really just want to normalize, of course, just how normal these feelings are, and that they are not, you know, like you said, like shared, just they're not all in your head and by yourself. More on the like January weirdness to come. But yeah, I think, you know, even just like the couch rotting and DoorDash, and I'm just hung over. It makes me think of like hangxiety, you know, like if you have drank or and then you wake up that next day and you're just like, and that's why I stopped drinking most of the time, because the anxiety was so bad. But it's not like you're alone in it. And there is just so many factors that go into why this feels so weird. But we all kind of feel like shit about it also.
Right. And I think like that period of time sort of kind of starts like around, you know, maybe a little before the holidays.
Agreed.
And goes to like mid-January at least, where you're just sort of like in the hallway. Like you've sort of exited this year already, but this next thing hasn't really feel, it doesn't really feel like it started. So you're just in that liminal space, which like liminal space can be beautiful, but it can also be very disorienting and like purgatory. So I was thinking about that. And I was also thinking about just like how weird it is that we operate by the calendar that we do, because like springtime to me is really like the new year, right? The renewal and new energy and life coming back. And the winter before that, whether it's December winter or February winter or whatever, it's like that's when we are all wintering, hibernating. We're in that sort of dark night of the soul of the earth, and like we're supposed to just be launching into this jolly, renewed energy on January 1st.
It's like, bullshit.
Yeah.
It is just bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah, more, listener, more on this entire episode. Keep listening, because we will have, like, those takeaway parts towards the end. And hopefully for this to just layer to you that, like, this is not all in your head, and this is not anything to feel super alone about. So stay tuned, spiritually dehydrated.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
So, as the title of the episode says, let's get all into seasonal feelings disorder, Em and Val's version, not Taylor's version, and how to navigate just that really intangible ether space that is January. So, what even is seasonal feelings disorder? Babe, don't crack the DSM because it's not in there, Okay? This is just our take on the cocktail of emotional, cognitive, somatic mindfuck weirdness that most people experience between, like, I put down early January and into winter, but I really believe that this has been happening for me in December.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm like, we can even
got a head start.
We can even run it back. I got a head start. So typical vibes that we're kind of sussing out: emotional flatness. I feel nothing, or I'm like feeling everything, and it's too much. Low motivation. Post-holiday exhaustion, shout out to Step Into My Office, spiritually dehydrated, right? Feeling out of sync with routines. This has been a really big one for me. That existential drift, what is my life? What is the meaning of this year? Did I even do anything this year, in quotes? What's next year going to look like? Social withdrawal or confusion, discombobulating times. I agree with that. It can be quite disorienting. And I think just the general sense of time being fake and that January is eternal.
6 months long,
at least. Oh, my God. And shout out to the January babies. I know it's tough out there. Shout out to my sister. Her birthday is literally the end of January. And I'm always like, when the fuck is it going to be her birthday? So seasonal feelings disorder, this is subclinical. This is situational. This is often temporary. Those temporary shifts that we experience due to that kind of emotional hangover of modern life, seasonality, and then, of course, capitalism colliding its little face into all of that, too.
And when we say subclinical, you know, basically it just means like, hey, this is like a normative thing that can happen with any of us. Doesn't mean it's pleasant, but it's not yet like reaching a threshold where it's become so disruptive to your life or so distressing that maybe you're like seeking help for it. Now, you know, we always say that like with anything even quote unquote subclinical, like, we still could use help, support, resources, whatever, right? So it's not like, you know, you don't need that unless your thing is like reached a diagnostic level. But we're all familiar probably with the idea of seasonal affective disorder, aka SAD. Like, what?
It was perfect.
Perhaps the only diagnosis that has an appropriate acronym.
I agree with that. Shout out.
Yeah. Just like how ACT is like, no, it's not ACT, it's ACT. It's because it's so action-focused, right?
I love that.
Yeah. So SAD is a clinically recognized subtype of major depressive disorder with a seasonal pattern. And I have met folks who have, like, reverse, like, typical. Yeah, where it's like, no, they get it more in the summer.
Yep.
Right? So it's not one size fits all, but it usually includes some sort of persistent low mood most days, significant changes in sleep or appetite, loss of interest and pleasure, feelings of hopelessness, worthlessness, all of our sort of like what we consider to be clinical depression, but it's just not, it's more secondary to the season happening. It's not something that someone is experiencing in the same way throughout the whole year. So, you know, often, of course, if you're at that point, like, yeah, go get therapy, go maybe explore medication. Light therapy is another one I know we've talked about before. Combination of things that you might really need to lean into, especially during that time of year, and like, you know, buoying yourself up before you know that that's coming. And, you know, again, it's important to remember that not all of the winter blues are pathological, right? Or, you know, any sort of like quote unquote mental health issue. And nonetheless, if you're really starting to slide into those depressive symptoms, like, take it seriously. Like, don't let yourself just sort of like suffer there. And if your symptoms are intense or persistent, getting in the way of your daily functioning, like, doesn't have to be your normal. And and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to stick around, but you don't have to just like wait it out like that.
Heard. Yeah, I think that's why I wanted to throw down that distinction, because I think a lot of folks come across the couch and everyone thinks that they have SAD, right? And again, some, yes, but that's why I thought it was cheeky to talk about seasonal feelings disorder as well, because I think
we all do have that.
We all do have
to
that.
To a degree.
And there is, you know, there's an over-identification with seasonal affective disorder, and it is just this, oh, everyone has it. And I'm like, oh, no,
I'm
you.
I'm so OCD.
Yeah, no, you fucking don't, right. Babe. Love you. So, yeah, just checking in on that, like, over-pathologizing and where we get our info from. So, the post-adrenaline crash. Why does this happen? December, we're talking high stimulation, travel, social obligations, financial pressure, bus, club, another club. Yep. It is crazy. Your nervous system is nervous, babe.
Yeah.
We're running on steam and adrenaline for like weeks at a time. And then January comes and it's the big old crash. Cortisol is dropping. And so when that is happening, we can experience that irritability, that fatigue, that mental fog. We don't want to concentrate. We're looking at our screens like, what the hell is happening? Our bodies are recalibrating from that chronic activation, and we're trying to inch our way back down to a baseline. Mm-hmm. So you just shot up, and then you're trying to skirt your way back down, and it takes a minute. It takes a minute. That holiday stimulation down into that January silence. So that sensory and social load is just shooting up in December. You're back home. You're seeing your friends. You're seeing your family. We're drinking more, or we're eating a lot of sweets or stuff that we don't usually eat, or we're out in the cold and we're in and out and there's parties. We're just having social whiplash. Mm-hmm. There is just such an increase in social aspects during this time of year, naturally. This is especially difficult for neurodivergent folks, which we'll hit on that in a little bit. But anyone, really, that is relying on their usual routines and predictable stimulation, we are just in a different spot of this year. So researchers can call this rhythm disruption, and it's exactly what it sounds like. Again, that ability or that attempt to recalibrate to your baseline after weeks of just not even doing those things. And I'm totally there right now. My workout routine went out the window. My skincare went out. Everything went out the fucking window. So also the circadian and seasonal impacts are really important in this conversation too. January has the shortest daylight.
Well, does December, that's what I'm confused about. Isn't December 21st
the longest night
of the year?
Yes.
So you would think that would be the shortest daylight.
We gain, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's somewhere around this, like, you know, weird period. Space. Maybe it's like the whole month of January compared to the whole month of December. Is darker.
That's how I conceptualize it. The darkest days
are around like December, 21st being like the peak. But I guess that would lean toward January overall is darker than December.
Sure.
Okay.
But we are gaining.
I had to math it.
Me too. But I know that we are gaining light after we have that longest.
After the 21st.
Yes. Yeah. So it gives a little bit of that hope. But I think it also feels like
it's
the carrot.
Still really fucking dark.
Dangling the carrot sometimes. So that's tough. First, depending on where you are, we might be looking at your coldest temperatures. In Tennessee, our weather is everywhere, babe. So I feel like sometimes it's normal or sometimes it's fucking cold.
It was like, what, 12 degrees or something a few days ago? Yeah. And then it was like 60 yesterday.
Yeah, I was sweating. Love that for me. So we're coming back with those disrupted sleep patterns. You were up till 4 a.m. because you didn't have to go to work. Mm-hmm. Emerson Ryder. So and then, you know, we have that really, really big crash. You know, we have that uptake in social stuff in December, and then January, for some people, it's just a huge crash. All of the socializing drops off. Mm-hmm. We come back from family, or friends are still out of town. Again, that is not calibrated. Oh. We're just looking at the effects on our serotonin, our melatonin, just, again, our overall energy, and, you know, just that reminder of, okay, all of these things are, you know, socially happening, what's happening externally and internally that's affecting you during this time. And again, just checking in on if it is to a degree that is scaring you or really, really dysregulating and impacting you, then we may be shifting from subclinical to clinical. So just checking in on those things.
I would like to file a complaint with whoever timed the holidays. I know every family is different with their traditions, but I feel like it's very common that a lot of, like, extended families get together for yes. Thanksgiving and whatever, you know, Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever sort of like winter holiday that they celebrate. And they're too fucking close together.
I agree.
Like, why are we trying to cram all this in?
It's like a 3-week turnaround. And it sucks.
It's too much. And then no wonder this crash happens, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, please do not speak to me until March. And so there's the existential letdown of this, of like, you know, we're coming into the holidays that are just full of ritual and meaning and nostalgia, community, connection, pie, all the things, lights, beautiful, joyful. And then January, where it's just like, and back to work and school, everybody. Here's no ritual, no connection, nothing fun for you, just cold and dark.
And dark.
And we are these like story driven, meaning based creatures, right? So when the narrative drops off, if you're hitting that slow point in your book and you're just like, when is this going to pick back up, right? Mm-hmm. What happened to the exciting part? So we can feel disoriented or a little bit of that, what is even real, like mild derealization,
yeah.
lack of purpose, sort of floating and bereft. And existential psychologists sometimes call this like the post-ritual drift. Yeah. Like, oh, it felt so good to be in the thing, but like, what am I now?
What am I doing now?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, connecting that to the cultural element of our lovely late-stage capitalist society that, gosh, it's the pressure cooker that starts in like, early November for all of the, because Black Friday, I feel like even in recent years, I mean, 5 years ago, it was like you maybe started getting promotions like a few days before Thanksgiving or something.
I agree with that.
And now it's like the entire month of November.
Yeah, they're November starting 1st. To
advertise all of the like, you know, Black Friday deals or whatever they're calling it so they can start doing it early. So, you know, we've already been bombarded with all of those messages since before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And then we get slapped on with another layer of now we're bombarded with all the things that, well, now you got to detox, you got to optimize, you got to hustle, you have to reinvent. So it's like a whole other layer of commercialization mm-hmm. and just like consumer culture at a time during the sort of circadian rhythm, the, you know, earth-based rhythm that our bodies need more rest, yeah. right? It's dark and cold and naturally, you know, as I often say, guess what? We're animals too, right? We may not be bears and doing straight up hibernation like a bear does, mm-hmm. but we do our own version of wintering and, or at least we're intended to as creatures. So we want that introspection. We want that coziness and that slower pace. But January is just like, you know, in this culture, we just jump right into full speed ahead, right? So there's that internal conflict and shame of like, what's wrong with me if this feels hard?
Yes, I love that. I think that paradox that just, yeah, those internal pieces, you know, it's this is rough for everyone. And then that's why the neurodivergent layer, because as I was writing this, I was like,
oh, yes, I'm having a hard time also.
Ah, well, yes.
The call is coming from inside the house.
Oh, honey, the call is literally coming inside from a pink phone. And so, you know, if you're neurodiverse, also the extra layers to that, the December masking fatigue. So maybe you're with that extended family or those people that like aren't getting it, or you kind of have to like, yes, grandma, you know, because grandma's up your ass about something. Love her, but damn, Betty. Ooh, sorry if your grandma's named Betty. Mine's not named Betty. Those sensory overload hangovers. Mm. Oh, so we're at the family's house and the toddlers are screaming and there's someone smoking. You know, it's just too much. The executive function depletion. So you're just, again, that when you are in high masking for so long, then it's like, oh, I'm coming home and I'm just
yeah.
dead.
Managing nothing a lot of logistics.
Else. Yeah, nothing else for myself is happening. It's just the minimal functioning that's happening. Demand avoidance when routines restart. This has really been a historic challenge for me because I'm putting all that pressure cooker in and on myself. January 1st, I need to be a better person and I have to completely reinvent myself and recalibrate. And who's the highest version of Emerson? Bitch, shut up. You're like tired and you don't know who that is right now because it's still winter and you're still recalibrating. And just the emotional burnout from inconsistent schedules. I think for folks that really structure well in and around routine, that just kind of goes out of the window when you're traveling or you're at granny's house and you don't have all your stuff or whatever. So, you know, that seasonal feelings disorder, I mean, or like seasonal affective disorder, if that is like what's happening for you, this can feel more intense or last longer if you're chilling anywhere on the autism spectrum or if you have ADHD or ADHD. So especially PDA, pathological demand avoidance profiles too. Like this can be a little bit longer and more intense. So just be cautious and just aware, you know, of that too, if that's relevant for you.
So we'll wrap this up with a few tangible little takeaways.
Yeah, because what the fuck can we do with it, right?
Exactly. Our best is what we can do.
Well, yes.
So as I was saying earlier about like the wintering and how really we vote that the new year should start in March.
Heard.
Honor winter energy, not new year energy, if that's not the mood that you're in. Your body is clearly not in bloom mode, right? The earth is not in bloom mode. It's in conservation mode. Yes. So allow yourself to lean into that slowness, warmth, coziness, and minimum viable expectations. And then use gentle structure.
Gentle.
Because, you know, we talked about how, like, with overrotting, we do need some structure.
Yes.
Like, a complete lack of structure is not freedom, my dears. Mm. It is often a little bit of structure gives us more kind of agency to step into a day that's going to feel really good. So pick a couple of anchors that make your nervous system feel steady and supported. Little anchors can be way better than like a big overhaul, right? Especially in early January. So that could just be a little bit of morning light.
Yeah.
Even though it's dark out there, like we still get this lovely sunshine at some points in the day. Warm drink, whether that's lemon water, your favorite tea, whatever. In the morning. A short walk, even if it's too cold that you don't want to go outside. You can find all kinds of great little indoor walking videos on YouTube if you don't have like a treadmill. A little evening wind down. So just find a couple things that give you a little bit of anchor in your day.
Heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leaning into the warmth. Warmth is going to help with that like regulatory piece too. So heat is helping calm that parasympathetic nervous system. So the cozy blanket does matter. The warm shower, not too hot because it is not great for your skin, even though I love scalding myself in the water. A warm shower, get that heating pad out, whatever, right? Just these are tools, not indulgences. And of course, you know, the caveat, don't feel like you have to go out and buy a bunch of shit to make it all better.
Right.
You know, like work with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Be, you know, cautious with that. Reducing stimulation. If we're recovering from the December chaos, it's like, holy crap, we're in overload.
Yeah.
So try that soft lighting or, you know, go find those noise-canceling headphones and those loop earplugs. Reduce some of that noise. Have a slower morning. Please, please do not get up and run and do that. I did that for years and didn't realize I was making myself sick.
Jump straight into your email.
Dude, give yourself some time. Less screen glare, you know, play with the light a little bit. Try to set your phone down. Tiny social touch points to avoid that social whiplash. So just send that voice note or check in with that friend via meme and see where their conversation goes. Or go have a low stakes hangout. We can go out of the house or just come over and let's watch something and just catch up over the holidays. And all of that is enough. And then again, kind of like with that, you know, 10-minute walk or that movement, just micro movement to kind of defrost a little bit. Start small, stretch, elongate the body and see what that feels like. Dance, just like have a little shimmy in the car or in your house or wherever, just to kind of help shake off the shutdown without feeling forced into, I have to 75 hard and I have to start doing two a days. Dude, just start small. It's okay.
I love that idea of like, how can you sort of defrost yourself?
I love it.
Yeah, like, you know, mentally, physically, all of that, that when we're defrosting, we don't jump right into 75 hard. We kind of,
know, do a little bit of movement. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, take it slow. We figure out what feels good. Doesn't mean you can't do anything intense or like do anything, jump into a big project in January, but can you like ramp up to it rather than expecting yourself to dive into the deep end?
Yes, at the 100%.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. But for real, January does feel weird. It is not just you, listener, because your nervous system was not just built to sprint through December and then immediately become this like new year, new me productivity machine, right? So this quote-unquote seasonal feelings disorder that we're making up is not actually a disorder in the sense that it is pathological.
No.
It is just the reality that given everything about this time of year, your body and brain are just saying, I need a goddang minute.
Please.
Yep. So you're not behind. You're not broken. You're just defrosting, babe.
Like a chicken in the freezer.
Yeah. Just let yourself slowly, intentionally wake up.
And now our musical segment. Now that's what I call
okay,
where Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
I wanted to kind of do like blue Christmas, winter sads, like anything that encapsulates this kind of feeling. You can also always go check out our really killer playlist where we put all of our songs, which is so nice. And I listen to it all the time. Linked in the show notes. So, Valerie, what is your song for this week?
There are so many good, like, kind of dark, sad holiday songs. It was really hard for me to pick. I just thought of another one that I was like, damn, I want to choose that one too. But I chose one by Sufjan Stevens called Sister Winter. He has a ton of holiday tracks, which we'll talk about in a second. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, indie folk, another similar to Joanna Newsom, Baroque pop, whatever the fuck that means, chamber pop. His work explores a lot of themes of like love, spirituality, grief, and outer space, question mark. A little bit, you know, out there. And so he has this project called Songs for Christmas, where he released over the, between December of 2000 and 2010, released a series of 10 EPs of Christmas songs. So then later put those into a couple of box sets.
Oh my God.
I know, right? It's so many holiday songs. So this one is just, I feel like, you know, kind of characteristic of his music, just like beautiful and haunting.
Pretty.
Right?
That I like loved the little slideshow. I was like, yeah, it's winter. No, just there's something like, haunting about it where you're kind of like, ooh, like you clutch your pearls a little bit.
And I like how that one in particular, some of his songs do this where they kind of start off that like low and haunting, but then it gets really big and almost brighter.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Just like gives a richness.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Okay. What'd you bring?
So I brought Christmas Makes Me Cry by Kacey Musgraves. So this is from her 2016 album, A Very Kacey Christmas, but I fell in love with this song on her 2019 Kacey Musgraves Christmas special. So funny, and like so many beloved people. She had Zooey Deschanel, Leon Bridges, Lana Del Rey. I mean, it was fierce.
And where was I? Under a rock.
Well, yes. So I'll have to send it to you. So sums up how I feel pretty much maybe every Christmas slash holiday season slash this like seasonal feelings ether space. So I don't know. This song just helped reduce so much shame within me during this time of year. Gives a soundtrack to the holiday blues when I'm in them or if you need one. So highly recommend. I wish I could pull the, this is on Spotify, Apple Music, whatever. This one that we're going to watch, she was singing live on Ellen. Lol. But she just sounds really beautiful live. So I'm excited for me to hear.
Lovely.
I know. It's sweet, right?
It's really sweet. And that was such a lovely, I mean, the song, the performance, the outfit, the makeup.
She's gorgeous. That like 60s like ish look on her is fierce. Yeah, check it out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
And now for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
Okay, and now for our final segment, and I have to LOL this time. Because you guys, how many of y'all
have had the thought, what is a fire dumpster? Not me, for the last year and a half or however the fuck long we've been doing this.
Well, yes.
When I came up with this name and thought, this is so cute, it makes so much sense. No, it's not a fire dumpster, you guys. It's a dumpster fire. So neither of us have realized this.
For like now, literally a year and a half.
I know. So now I don't even know what to call it. I'm like, are we just sticking with it? I don't know,
guys. I vote that we should.
Fire dumpster phoenix.
It makes sense that, of course, it makes sense that we would do that for literally almost a year and a half and just, I've never questioned it, y'all. I've just been like, yeah. No, right? Absolutely.
Right, yes. Exactly. So yeah, I recognized it when I was designing a cute little graphic. And then my mom sent one in the mail, which I'll tell you about in a second. But she even wrote it out there, fire-dumpster phoenix. And I wonder, did she think to herself, this is kind of weird. Mom, let me know.
Let us know, girl.
What's your story?
So I plucked this one for you because I thought you would love. So in quotes, trashed panda raises a buttload of money for a charity.
Oh, my God.
So a little raccoon in Richmond, Virginia, this is the scene, has gone viral for being found, kind of scary, unconscious in a liquor store.
Baby.
After, I'm going to say it's a he, broke in, trashed it. Sounds and then like basically,
male behavior.
Well, yes, a man would do this. Love you, men. Sorry. He trashed it, broke in, and basically got so drunk, he passed out in the bathroom, literally like belly down.
Homie, do we know what frat he's in?
I mean, I think it's Kappa Sig. Like, I think it's tried out. You know, that he was fucked up. This pledge was fucked up. So, Hanover County Animal Protection revealed the story after one of their officers was called out to Ashland APC to retrieve the little guy. So, I pulled this quote, just tickled me. Officer Martin safely secured our masked bandit and transported him back to the shelter to sober up before questioning. After a few hours of sleep and zero signs of injury, other than maybe a hangover and poor life choices, he was safely released back to the wild, hopefully having learned that breaking and entering is not the answer.
Oh my God. Did he have anxiety? We have to know.
He had anxiety so bad, he went back to his little burrow and he was like, fuck, I have to DoorDash and like, I have to like hit my weed pen and I'm freaking out.
Who saw me do that?
And like his girlfriend is like, So where were you? So where were you? You know, and I don't blame her. So Bonfire, a merch company, was offering a line of trashed panda merch and decided that all the proceeds were going to go to this animal shelter in Hanover, which I thought was so cute. So by December 5th, they'd already raised $100,000. And the proceeds just keep climbing. Last I checked, it was $180,000.
Wow.
So all of this money is helping the animals that they care for at the shelter, costs for training officers to ethically handle animals that they rescue, and all around just, like, supporting the shelter's needs. So I just thought it was literally fucking hilarious, but with, like, a very sweet note. And Valerie loves raccoons, guys. She is a little trash panda. That's her spirit animal. Yep. So I knew I had to pull this one for her.
Oh, I love it. And it's like, you know, the money is such a great thing. That
yes.
It's going to such a good cause. And I always love when like animals are caught doing stupid shit.
Me too.
But they're okay.
Yes.
You know?
Because I was like unconscious on the bathroom. But I was like, oh, right. He was fine.
He was fine.
He just had really bad anxiety and his DoorDash credit is up. So.
And what did he get on the app store that we may never know? Oh my God. Okay. So mine, which was literally mailed to me through the postal service by my mother.
Which is just
a magazine clipping.
So cute.
Thank you, Mom. From the Sierra Clubs magazine. And the title is, At the City of Joy, Women Learn to Farm, Heal, and Lead. So City of Joy is this nonprofit in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Ooh.
It was founded in 2011, and it is a six-month program for female survivors of violence, of which there are, unfortunately, a lot there. Often sexual violence at the hands of rebel soldiers. Mm. I think the age for this program is between 18 and 30.
Okay.
And in this area, only 1 in 5 women is literate.
Wow.
So the program starts with reading and writing, and then it gets into civic law, nutrition, reproductive health, self-defense.
Wow.
Meanwhile, they're doing group therapy, dance, they're doing climate justice work, and this all happens on this over 800-acre farm that they are all caring for and tending and working as a collective to grow the food that sustains the center year-round. I pulled a little quote that says,
they're taught that developing a healthy relationship with the earth is another way of healing themselves.
Stop.
I know. And over 2,000 women so far have gone through this program since it was founded in 2011. Graduates are meant to return to their communities as leaders and agents of change. And it shared some stories of some wonderful people who have, you know, gone from like the worst experiences to then becoming those leaders in their communities. And so beautiful.
Oh my God. I have goosebumps just thinking about it. Shout out, Mom. That's a great story.
Thanks, Mom. All right, listeners. Well, go be in the liminal space. Slow down. Yeah. Take care of yourself.
Stimulate the vagus nerve, and it'll all be okay.
Yes.
See you soon.
This has been another episode of But For Real, produced by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder, and edited by Sean Conklin.
But For Real is a Gaia Center production. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at But For Real Pod.
But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment.
Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy here about sharing our opinions on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode.
See you next time, bestie.